2 für Union nach 0 zu 2 Rückstand. Nikos Mega hat vertändelt die Chance, weil er mit dem Rücken zum Tor die
Moin, wir haben Samstag, den 14. November 2020. Es ist gut 3 Stunden später als 19.10 Uhr und wird eine Sonderfolge des Millerton in der Länderspielpause, wegen der unser FC St. Pauli dieses Wochenende nicht zum Einsatz kommt, außer in einem gestrigen Testspiel. Deshalb habe ich mir gedacht, ich mache mal wieder eine internationale Folge und habe mir wieder bekannte Gäste eingeladen, deren Stimmen ihr schon mal gehört haben könntet. Ich bin Yannick und werde jetzt gleich ins Englische wechseln. Würde mich freuen, wenn ihr zuhört und mir vielleicht auch mal Feedback gebt, wie ihr das so findet, die internationalen Folgen. So, this is an international episode by the Millerton. We have Saturday night, November the 14th. And you're listening to an international episode with me, Yannick, and I want to give a warm welcome to my guests. They will be talking to me from an increasingly high-tech studio high above the secret underground bunker deep underneath the permafrost layer of Calgary, Alberta, Canada. They are 7,000 kilometers removed from the Millerton and they're making the podcast Fell in Love with a Girl. Moin moin, Sean and Samantha.
Moin moin.
Moin. How are you?
I think you do that better than I do, Yannick.
On the few occasions where you've made the attempt.
Yeah. I wrote it down, to be honest.
One day we'll have to get you to record the translation of that in German for us.
Yes.
I can do that, sure. Yeah, I'm happy to have you here. In case some of the audience does not know you, just give us a short introduction of yourselves. Who are you? What are you doing? And why the FC St. Pauli?
Well, I'm Sean. I'm the producer and co-host, he, him, of Fell in Love with a Girl podcast. I should let you do your thing.
And I'm Samantha. She, her, I am the co-host of the podcast and otherwise disruptor of the podcast. I do not do any of the producing, but why FC St. Pauli? They just speak to our heart. They are the club for us that espouses our values, and what can you not love about that?
Absolutely. When the stadium has Kein Fußball, den Faschisten painted right on the walls of the stadium, how do you not respect that position and the ability to put it out there for the whole world to see?
That's true. Just some words maybe on your podcast. You're going in the fifth year, you told me in advance. How has it been doing a podcast so many kilometers removed from the Millerton?
For me, I find it exhausting. As you will know, Yannick, it is as much as it's a labor of love, but when you're working full-time, plus having to do a podcast, trying to get up early to watch matches and cram everything in, it can be a lot, but it's been such a fun 5 years, and I've loved meeting other people like yourself and being able to go to Hamburg and see the U.S. tours. I don't know if we would have done all of those things and met all of these people if we hadn't been doing the podcast.
Yeah, to echo that, I think it's been a really amazing journey, and we've been so terribly, terribly privileged to have had all of these amazing experiences and connected to all of these amazing people, and it's because of FC St. Pauli.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, funny that you mentioned it, Samantha. It's about a year ago that we met in the wine bar at Millerton after the match against Hannover. Yeah. Was a nice night.
The night was lovely. The day, maybe not so much.
Yeah, we're coming up to the first anniversary of our trip to Hamburg. Yeah. Watching that match against Hanover and coincidentally getting engaged
in
at the
Jolly Roger.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I think the most important question in these days is how have you personally been and how is the situation with Corona in Canada?
For me, I was already working from home. So in that respect, I've had no change. It's actually probably made my work life better because everybody else is realizing that you can still be an effective work team. without having to see each other face to face. Personally, I do miss going out to our home away from home, our favorite pub, which other than that, that would probably be the worst part of it. So I've been handling it okay. Sean has definitely a different experience. I think Canada overall, it depends on where you are. In the province where we live, we did go into lockdown for a couple of months when it first happened, but now, you know, despite rising cases, they refuse to really do much other than close gyms, and you can't serve alcohol past 11 o'clock. Like, that's their attempt at making a dent into the cases.
Yeah, our regional government, the province of Alberta, has been really hands-off in terms of regulating health measures and preventative measures for the spread of coronavirus. So it's been really frustrating to see that level of leadership taking a very laissez-faire sort of approach to mandating precautions. So we've had a fairly firm hand from the federal government in Ottawa. I think the Trudeau government, as much as I think they're far from perfect in a lot of ways, they've shown a lot of leadership. And then our province has been really poor, I think. But the mayor of the city where we live, Calgary, has been very proactive and passed a municipal bylaw mandating masks because the provincial government wasn't stepping up and fulfilling its responsibilities.
Yeah. Okay. How is it in general? Because here in Germany, normally every county, so to speak, makes the decisions by itself because we have a federal system. Is it the same in Canada that that every city or every county decides by itself, or are there also rules and stuff that are told by the government?
Well, since we have the three layers of government, I would say the municipal, so like the city government, is the one that has been taking the most proactive steps to try and curb coronavirus. And then the provincial government will occasionally come in and put in rules in place and then repeal them and then put new rules in place. And then our federal system, I think, has provided guidance. The only main thing that they've done is close the border with the United States. So you cannot drive across the border, but you can still fly in and out of the U.S. to Canada, which is a bit of a weird thing. If you can fly, why can't you drive? It's the same thing.
Yeah. So one of the other major steps that the Canadian federal government enacted was the Canadian Emergency Response Benefit, which was basically a universal basic income, which is a surprisingly socialist move from a liberal government.
Neoliberal,
I should say. So it's basically provided $2,000 Canadian to every individual who's been affected in any way by coronavirus. So in my case, where I was laid off, I've basically been, I've had my unemployment insurance benefits extended far past what would be the case in a regular unemployment situation. So it's been good to see that social safety net put in place. There are unintended consequences. My uncle is a social worker in the next province over from us, and he says that he's experienced a number of his clients who suffer with addictions issues really kind of falling through the cracks with the use of their benefits to feed their habits, and without the proper healthcare provided by the province to manage those issues. So while the vast majority of people have been reasonably taken care of, I think there are some people who have been suffering despite the best efforts of our governments at all levels.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, there's some comparisons to Germany, because rules and restrictions are given and more and more they are given nationwide. But like you said, why can you fly over to the US but not take the car? I mean, here we have like all the bars and restaurants closed down, and no alcohol after 10 o'clock, I think. And still the buses and trains are full, and you still have those people who wear no mask and refuse to wear a mask, and huge demonstrations with so many rule breakings, and the situation keeps on being complicated, and I think nobody has the right solution in his mind or pocket or something. We have to see how it goes.
I'm surprised that you said the restaurants are still closed. Like, you're not allowed to have anybody. Like, is it only takeout then? Food? You can't sit in a restaurant yet?
No.
Huh. We can sit in restaurants here. You have to be separated. There's much less capacity, mm-hmm. but you can still go out and have a meal here.
No, it's just for this month, and then they have to decide how it goes on. But yeah, you can only call in and take away, so that they won't go down in this second lockdown. But it's still in the first one and the second one now. It's the restaurants and bars and clubs and stuff who suffer the most over here, I think.
Yeah, we've seen a few cultural venues like concert halls or clubs that specialize specifically in hosting concerts suffer some really devastating effects because of the lockdowns. I mean, it's not a perfect solution. And it's horrible to lose all these cultural venues. So I hope that we'll have the good sense to put our masks on, to wash our hands, to keep our hand sanitizer in our pocket at all times, because it's going to be so hard to rebuild these venues and to rebuild I think there's going to be a long-term awareness of just how vulnerable we are when we're out in large crowds. I think this is going to be, I think, something of a generational event for us. I think there's going to be a memory that lingers in certain people. In
a generation corona, so to speak.
Yeah. And I think some of us will be much more aware of our surroundings moving forward, but we're also going to have people who have been disregarding things like social distancing and mandatory mask wearing. It'll be interesting to see what the long-term effects of this situation are going to be.
Yeah. Okay. Down to the beginning of our talk. And I would love to say that it gets better now, but we just go across the border. And I just want to have a quick thought, a quick question on your thoughts on the elections in the U.S. That I have to force myself not to swear. This orange guy has to move out of the White House. What are your thoughts?
I couldn't be more thrilled that he has to be evacuated from the White House. I think it's a shame. The person that got elected, Biden, he would not have been my first choice, but he's better than the orange monstrosity that's in there now. So from that perspective, I'm happy. Hopefully the U.S. takes this as the next 4 years as an opportunity to grow and learn that maybe a little bit of socialism, like a little bit of kindness, a little bit of caring for other people isn't a bad thing.
I wish my outlook was as rosy, and I can't believe that's the rosy.
When am I the optimistic, happy one? Never.
Americans in general, to really simplify things, I think we're given the choice between a very centrist neoliberal who has a proven track record of working with very conservative elements of the U.S. government, and a literal fascist who's doing everything that he can to try and steal an election from the legal electorate, because there have not been any significant evidence of voter fraud, and yet he shouts from his Twitter account and the pulpit of, or sorry, the podium of the office that he currently holds, to try and convince his base that he's been done wrong and that he should be the leader moving forward, when really the numbers have been very clear that he's not the elected official who should be residing in the White House come January. And yet the numbers of people who turned out to vote for the current resident of the White House has
it was disappointing.
It's really disappointing that, sure, Biden has won the popular vote, but it's not by a wide margin. Would think
it shouldn't have been that close of a vote.
No.
And I think for people to have lived these past 4 years and still vote for the peachhead, I don't understand it. I don't get how he could have gotten almost 50%. Like, it's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, yeah. The American people have largely spoken and with their voice said, well, you know, at least half, well, just under half of them have said, we're willing to accept a fascist who won't recognize constitutionally dictated term limits to own the libs. Like, it's literally this spiteful act, because the U.S., from an outsider's point of view, and I can't stress that enough, I'm not an American resident, I'm not an expert on U.S. Politics, but I think we've all had to become experts, or at least take a very severe crash course in learning about the American system to understand just what the ramifications of what has happened, and more importantly, what might come next. We're kind of putting our eggs in one basket and hoping that when the time comes for him to vacate the White House, that they're able to get him out and to have a successful transition from the current administration to this new Biden administration. We're not there yet. And I think it's tough to be optimistic until that has happened. And even once that transition has been made, what is this new government going to look like? Mm-hmm. We have a vice president who served under President Obama, who was really, I think, kind of a disappointment compared to how
to the expectations?
The expectations and how he campaigned on hope. And it was really kind of more of the same. He had an opportunity to close Guantanamo Bay. He didn't. He expanded deportation from the U.S. and was even nicknamed the deporter in chief. He drone striked a lot of people around the world, including the use of drones against American citizens on U.S. soil. I mean, it was really not what I think the world was expecting when Barack Obama took office. And I think we have to be prepared that when Joe Biden takes the Oval Office, if there is indeed a successful and peaceful transition, what that presidency is going to look like. And in the meantime, the U.S. Senate, which is the chamber of sober second thought, and I'm using heavy editorial quotation marks around that, is so loaded currently with Republican loyalists who will stand in the way of every attempt to make substantive change for the people of the United States. My outlook, I guess I'm not quite so positive as some people might think.
Okay, I will just give my two cents to the topic as well. I can totally agree with some things you said. I will remember Peach Head now. I really like that.
My go-to is Sweet Potato Hitler.
Oh, Sweet Potato Hitler is also good.
Okay. I totally agree that no matter who would have replaced him, it just can be better than this guy. I was constantly shaking my head during the elections that so many Trump supporters were crowding the streets and armed like soldiers. Those were pictures that you can't imagine over here in Germany, that the people of the AfD would like dress up as soldiers and march through the streets, and the whole thing that the elections took so long you said that 50% almost was voted for him. I think it's the same with some people voting over here, that when you've been voting Republican since 50 years, why change that now? So in their minds, you know, there are parts in the U.S. and it's mostly the countryside. They've always been red. They will be red for the next, I don't know, 200 years.
From a totally, again, outsider observation, the biggest challenge, I think, is because as the state of Germany exists, they routinely create coalition governments to make a functioning government. In Canada, we are a little shyer about the creation of coalition governments. We have three major parties and a couple of much smaller ones that will vote with different parties to pass issues, but nothing quite like what you'll see in a lot of European governments, which is the coalition. In the U.S., it is the light is on or the light is off. You are either blue or red, and I think that's one of the most fundamentally broken parts about their system. And we see this partisan gap between the two parties growing wider and wider with not only every election, but every year. So I think the whole system really needs to be kind of torn down and reworked and reimagined, because the way it's going, there's only a couple of potential outcomes. It's a fascist dictatorship or kind of this neoliberal capitalist state as it largely exists now, and we know which way both of those conclude, and it's not good in either case.
I think what drives me the most around the bend when it comes to the U.S. politics and the political system is the inherent hypocrisy, where they have no problems throughout history going into other countries and demanding that they be democratic and, you know, don't be a communist. And then yet in this election, you can have people running up to vote counting centers and banging on the windows and trying to intimidate the vote counters that, you know, you have supposed fraud that is, was a strong potential. And I just, we allow this country this power. They have assumed a certain level of they have assumed a certain set of power or a certain limit of power, and that the rest of the world allows them to keep that power. And I think if the world was to set up and step against the fascist pigs, that we could do so much better. So I think the rest of us also, I think we, I'm disappointed in the rest of the world of not stepping up to the US. Like, I get that they're a large economic machine, but so is China, so is India, so is Europe. And I think if those countries were banding together, those blocks banding together, you can strip the power away from the American system. And that's truly what needs to happen, is somebody having the guts to stand up to the US.
Yeah, but unfortunately, we have over here in Europe a right wing tending in many, many countries. So I don't think that people are more and more nationalist in some countries. So focusing on their own country and not thinking of an alliance against evil USA.
But I think that's what's frustrating. Like, so all of these countries are becoming more nationalistic. India is getting frighteningly nationalistic, and they are also an economic superpower. But yet everybody still gives the US power. And I think it's just that it's power is usually given, not taken. So if you're going to, we're allowing the US this power, and that's what's frustrating.
And Trump.
You said the name. We were doing so well.
You know, he campaigned on the slogan of Make America Great Again, but also America First. Well, the historic reality is no matter who's been in office, it's always been a policy of America First.
Yeah.
I mean, you just have to scratch the surface to learn about the history of regime change around the world enacted by the U.S. military and intelligence apparatus in Latin and South America, in the Middle East, in Africa. I mean, there's so many examples, and yet, I mean, we think that if the quote unquote good guys get in office, that's going to change. And I just don't see a mechanism for change on the horizon.
Okay, that's after half an hour of bad topics. Yeah, let's stay in the US, but focus on an FC St. Pauli related topic. Yesterday it was announced that we won't continue, or we, the FC St. Pauli, will not continue his contract after this season with Under Armour. I think in the last months, we had many, many other topics to think about than our how you call it.
We have had other priorities to think of.
Now, what's the name for Under Armour? Like, what is it for us?
Oh, the technical partner, the sponsor, the kit manufacturer.
Kit manufacturer.
Okay, whatever. I think in the last months they weren't so much in focus, but we all think of like this military kit that they wanted us to wear, and many other quite little topics. But the Under Armour wasn't like the best sponsor we ever had, so to say. What are your thoughts?
Well,
I'm not surprised they wasn't renewed. I'm thrilled they weren't renewed. Their kits were okay. This year's, I mean, anybody who's happened to listen to our podcast knows how much I hate this year's kit with a passion.
I think I'm rather happy about the end of the relationship with Under Armour. I know a lot of people have had problems with Under Armour, and I certainly see them as a problematic entity, especially within the context of FC St. Pauli. I don't think they were ever really a good fit. I disagree. I think from a strictly design point of view, they've had some very interesting and bold kits, some memorable ones. But their values don't mesh with our values. I don't like to look at a company as a monoculture. Their founder, whose name I'm blanking on at the moment, very early on in 2016, made some pro-Trump comments, and that's not the only problem with Under Armour, but to have such a close proximity to a company like that, I think it's great that we're taking the opportunity to draw a line under our time with Under Armour and see what else is out there. Now the question then becomes, what's next? And I think from what I've been able to piece together, Under Armour was a relationship that came out of necessity. So we'll see what happens after this. I suspect the club has already found a technical partner to see them bring the agreement to a conclusion early. I think probably telegraphs that they've got, if not another relationship lined up, that they will have something soon.
So who do you think Yannick is going to replace Under Armour?
Or who do you hope for?
Or who both? Do you hope?
Yeah, that's a difficult question. First of all, I'm relieved that Under Armour is not our partner in the future. I think we have so many things to deal with due to the fact that fans are not able to visit the stadium right now and in further months, so to fear. So we have to focus on other stuff than dealing with political issues with our kit sponsor. So I hope that that we maybe like we did with Timo Schulz, we are talking about him later. Let focus on a little more grounded, a partner that has more history, maybe with the club or with the club's values, and who fits more to the club than just being a great name over in the US and giving a lot of money compared to others. I like the Hummel kits in the past. That would be the first name to come to my mind. But honestly, I didn't think about this so far. I was just relieved that Under Armour won't be making the new kits and everything that is combined with them being our sponsor in the future.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of people who are going to be terribly upset that Under Armour won't be the sponsor.
I mean, like, they fit. I feel like FC St. Pauli has been on a bit of a U.S. expansion during the past 5 years. So in that perspective, I think they fit well. A well-known American brand when they're going to continue to visit the U.S. and that kind of thing. That part was good, I guess. Not especially like this year's kits, I think, are an abomination. It feels like they were just slapped together and kind of any old material used. I do like, was it the first third year kit with the skull?
Mm-hmm.
That one I really, really liked. But other than that, they're okay. They're okay. I feel like we could do better somewhere else.
It'll be interesting to see who comes next and what the design is like. Will we end up with just a template shirt in
brown?
That's
what I'm scared of, is like the template, like what Nike and Adidas does is all of the teams get the same template and it's just a different color. And that is really disappointing and just lacks personality, I think.
Well, I think Nike has made some really interesting design choices. I mean, through recent history, everything was based on their vaporware template, and everything kind of looked the same. And there was some weird choices that didn't necessarily fit with the history and traditions of certain clubs or even certain national teams. And they were trying to I think, rely too heavily on just recoloring the same shirt over and over and over again. Whereas even in the last 2 years, we've seen some really interesting, spectacular designs come out of the Nike design labs. And hopefully whoever we end up with next doesn't just stick us in a brown teamwear uniform and call it good. And hopefully they make an effort to reflect the values and the culture and the history and the traditions of FC St. Pauli, because that is very important. We recently spoke to Marion Reimers of Fox Sports, and she talked about football shirts as being a second skin and a way of putting your identity out there in front of the world to see. And I think it's very important that whoever we end up with next at least makes an effort. And I think for their many, many faults, Under Armour tried to tell the story of FC St. Pauli through some of their designs. They didn't always get it right. I think there were some
missteps.
Some errors made along the way, but I mean it's not a conversation that we're going to have about them moving forward, which is I think progress.
Although Yannick, this was a very dangerous question to ask, since Sean is the biggest kit nerd, and he could probably
talk. I'm
not the
biggest kit nerd.
Okay, out of the three of us, who's the biggest kit nerd?
Well, I do like shiny bits of polyester.
I'm really glad that whoever in the audience who also listens to the German monthly show, this show is supposed to be a fashion podcast. So finally, in this special episode, we are back on the fashion topics.
I am probably like the least fashionable human being on the planet, though.
Yeah, but this football kits are its own fashion. It's not like normal fashion. You can't. It's not the same at all. For me, in some ways, it's like the uglier, the better. If it's loud, in your face, I love it.
So
and Sean just rolled his eye. Yeah, Sean just completely rolled his eyes at me. But like, you like 90s goalkeeper kits, which are tragic.
They are.
And they're loud and annoying.
What was the last kit you bought?
Oh, well, Sean has on his way, the last one he bought, or I bought, it's for his birthday, now long past, but it's this year's third kit is what he's getting for a birthday / Christmas present, which is like we're attached to it because it very much reminds us of like the Canadian tuxedo, which is jeans, like you wear a jean shirt on top and you wear jeans. That's the Canadian tuxedo. So.
With a jean jacket. it's all denim all the time.
All denim.
So it's been a bit of a running joke. But I think it was an interesting design choice. Like of the three kits that we're wearing this year, is by far the most interesting.
Yeah.
Whether you love it or hate it, that's a different matter. But at least it's a strong choice.
What was your other kit purchase right before? Didn't you buy something not that long? Was it a Beşiktaş jersey that you bought?
I have a Beşiktaş jersey. No. You're probably thinking of Red Star FC.
Oh, that's what you bought.
Yeah.
Also a very nice shirt.
Yeah. So, yeah, to come back to St. Pauli, it's interesting. I wish I was a fly on the wall to be witness to what this process looks like, because I think it's an interesting story. We have mandated values in terms of the textiles being fair trade and the assembly of the shirts being fair paid. So, you know, we can't just go with any old manufacturer. It has to be ethically sourced. So I think that creates its own challenges, and it'll be interesting to see who. I think someone is going to have to rise to the challenge rather than us lower our bar to accept whatever someone brings to the table.
Yeah, I agree. So it would be interesting to see who comes after Under Armour. But instead of you guys, I think I'm in the ranking of the three of us, I'm on third place. What fashion questions are concerned? My last kit was the one with the rainbow colors on the sleeves, like on the end of the sleeves, the away kit.
Mm-hmm.
Thing is like
that is
some years ago.
That is one of my all time favorite kits.
It's beautiful kit.
If I ever find it in a size large enough for me. then I will snap that up without hesitation. It is a bit of a unicorn for me.
So is that your favorite kit, Yannick, or do you have one from before that's more favorite?
No, I have older ones, but they were all secondhand. This one was the first one I bought. Not the first one. I bought one goalkeeper shirt when Chauner that did his header against Paderborn years ago. That was the first away kit. And yeah, I wasn't so much of a fan, and they're much too expensive. And I like more buying shirts from the Fanladen or secondhand stuff than this expensive kits.
If you walked into a vintage shop, I'm sorry for interrupting. If you walked into a vintage shop and you saw, let's say, last year's third shirt sitting on the shelf, and it was in pristine condition, and it was your size, and it was a very, very reasonable price, would you buy it even though it's an Under Armour shirt, or is that just a line that you don't feel comfortable crossing?
Okay, if we focus on the question buying Under Armour or not, secondhand would be okay for me. And you really expect me to have in mind how the third kit last year looked like?
The black with the rainbow across the chest, which I think is probably one of our best.
Yeah. Okay.
Shirts.
Yeah. Now I have a picture in my mind. Yeah. Yeah. Of course. I mean, if it's secondhand and it's for a reasonable price, my money wouldn't be going to Under Armour directly. So yeah, that would be okay for me. Okay.
One thing that I think is... Oh, I'm
just
so
let
sorry.
It go. Stop. You need to stop.
Okay. I'll stop talking about shirts now.
We have a larger amount of time than usual, but we should still focus on our schedule. We make a big step over the ocean and speak of the summer pause or summer break or whatever you want to call it. Many changes on the pitch and in the staff. First question is, who do you miss the most of the players leaving during last season? So winter break is also included.
And Sean just threw me under the bus and pointed at me to make me answer first. Mats is probably my number one. I'm torn on my number
that.
Two. How could you not know that? I think Fearman and Gyökeres are, I'm tied on those two of who I miss the most as my runner-up.
The heart of St. Pauli not that long ago put out an article about how we're missing a bastard. and I really agree with Danny on this. I think we are missing that center hard man who can mete out a bit of extrajudicial justice on the pitch when the time is needed. So I really miss Johannes Flum.
Mm.
I think Voldemar Sobota was also capable of really talented forward play, as well as not really taking a whole lot of grievance from the opposition players. So I think if I had to rank them, I would say Valdi number one, just because of that creative flair. And last year he probably had his best season in a brown and white jersey. So I really do miss him a lot, as much as I do miss Mats as well. And Hank, I don't disagree with your choices at all. I had to be the contrarian and I had to say something a little different. But yeah, Johannes Flum also, he had an energy in the center of the pitch. And when he was on, you knew you couldn't really mess around too much because Flumy would come and yell at you.
Oh, especially when he was captain. When he wore that captain's armband, he took that kind of bastard energy up a notch, yeah. And I loved it.
Yeah, he took it from 10 to 11. Yeah. And I really miss that quality. Now, I don't think that's anything against the current squad. It's just it's another dimension that we don't really have.
Yeah. Who do you miss, Yannick?
I'm a little, ashamed, or not ashamed, but surprised that you are not mentioning Jan Schnecke Kalla.
See, and he's always in the back of my mind from a cultural perspective. I miss him, just like we still miss Hirvagen, and I think it's that cultural, like, actually sticking to the roots. But from, like, football, I don't think I ever really got to witness the best of Kalla. From like an act, just if we're going to talk pure on the pitch, I never got to see the best of Kalla.
So your decisions were just sportive perspective.
Mine was completely sportive. Out of all of the seasons, this season, I feel like we should be doing better than what we are. And I think that's probably what's coloring my decision this time. I think if you asked me 2 months ago, I'd give you a completely different answer.
I think Kalla is definitely missed. But because we've seen so little of him in the last couple of seasons, I think he wasn't the first person to come to mind. He's obviously been an incredible part of the club, especially in its most recent history. And I think in my heart, even though he's gone to Victoria to continue playing, it feels like he's not necessarily gone yet, because I think it won't be too long before we see him back in the day-to-day operations of the club before long. So I think
I miss him against Bochum, though. I don't know what it is about him and Bochum.
That like, one moment in Bochum is just
but every time we play Bochum and he got to play, it was always
there was some magic
going on. Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe that's a bit of an excuse on my part in terms of making my choices. Accept it as an excuse or take it at face value. I'll leave it up to you.
I mean, on a sportive perspective, I totally agree with especially Mats. I already missed him in the second half of last season. Why I mentioned Kalla is just because I think it's so unfair that just this summer, with all this corona shit going on, and no people in the stadium, no real saying goodbye to the stands. This is just what breaks my heart, and I really hope that when one day we all can come together as 30,000 people back to the Milan Tor, that he will get his farewell game and. We can all say goodbye again, and I will cry, and
I think we all will.
There has not been a proper grieving session, is really what it is.
Yeah, and he deserves that grand send off.
Totally.
For the amount of time and dedication that he's given the club over the years. That's absolutely deserved. And the additional sour note, not just of a global pandemic, but of having maybe one of the worst managers in the club's history, really kind of ignore him and put him off to the side. And then in the last two matches, well, we'll give you a bit of an appearance for your last home game, even though it's not in front of anyone. And we'll put you on briefly as a sub in your very last match, again in a brown white jersey.
For Lahouque to say that Kalla was third choice, like he was last choice, is
It's so horribly disrespectful.
I was insulted, and I wasn't even the object. Like, so I can't imagine how Cal would have felt about being last choice. That's I do not miss our last manager at all.
No, let's not talk about Luke. Okay. Yeah, lucky for me, when I go to the women's games, the former third team, now second team, because they got promoted, he's the coach of it, and so at least sometimes at the stands of Feld Arena, I can see him and have a little chat, and yeah, he's not gone like Sean said.
Yeah.
Okay, those are the ones we miss. But there are many, many names new to the staff or to the team. We won't talk about everybody, but just maybe focus on one or two names, each of you. Who do you have the most expectations in, and who has already convinced you that he is a good adding to the team?
You go first this time, because you threw me under the bus last time.
I think Daniel Kofi Kire was an incredible pickup for us. He has such incredible close ball control. He's been unlucky in the last few matches not to end up on the score sheet. I think there's a bit of chemistry that needs to be worked out with the current lineup, but I think that's kind of a byproduct of, basically, when you crunch the numbers, half the squad left or moved on to different clubs or weren't re-signed. So I think there's always going to be that need to rebuild some of the chemistry within the squad. So I, even though he hasn't ended up scoring in the last few matches, I think Kire is an incredible signing and picked up as an absolute bargain. Even though he left, he's back, and that's James Lawrence. I can't wait to see him return to the first team on a regular basis. I think he offers a defensive mindset that maybe we haven't had the best defense in the past few games. We certainly got some steel in our spine against HSV, but in the games that we should be on paper winning, I think part of our weakest attribute has been in our defense, and we've routinely let opposition players behind our back line, and that's put a lot of pressure on us. So those are my two.
Does that mean I'm allowed to talk?
Yeah, why don't you go?
I really like Dashner. I think he needs to have an opportunity to start. I think every time he comes on the pitch, he makes some sort of an immediate impact, which I really like. Like, definitely the feeling of the match changes when he steps on the pitch. And the article the interview that he did on FC St. Pauli's website, saying that he already feels at home in Hamburg, speaks a lot as well. So it's nice to hear that he's feeling settled and that all he wants to do is concentrate on his football and kind of get better. I think for him, he's my favorite. I would say the one that I'm slightly disappointed in so far is Mackinac. He's one that I'm just not, like, to Sean's point, it's like the chemistry between him and Chire isn't coming to fruition yet. So he needs a little bit more work to convince me that he belongs in the starting lineup.
I think it's a matter of, and I know Timo has been working with the formation to try and fine tune things to bring the club together or the team together. And I think once those parts click, I think Mackinac probably works better as an attacking midfielder and putting Kire up front.
But But that's just it. Timo keeps starting with two up front instead of giving Kire that sole striker capability.
Okay, I have to. I was just confused because I was thinking about pronouncing names. And I know it's even harder for you, but it's not Kire, it's Chire.
See, and we've heard two different versions of it, and so we were unsure. Now we know, Chire. Thank you.
I mean, that's just what he calls himself. So we at the moment don't focus on that. Didn't forget that Chire and Mackinock scored the 2-1 together, right?
But when you look at the potential of Chire and Mackinock as two separate entities, I think the parts work really well. It's when you put the two parts together, there seems to be like a, not an incompatibility, because I don't think they're incompatible. I think they're, if you were to use the analogy of they are parts of a machine, I think just the gears aren't meshing quite the way they ought to yet. I think it'll come. I don't think that it's by any means a lost cause. I think it's just going to take a little time and a little bit of massaging the system to make them work at their most optimum together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you speak of tactics and the whole system, I think we can just talk about 7 games, right? It's just nothing that you can judge a staff by so good. But I think the whole idea that Timo wants to play is completely different to what we have played before, which I really love. I love that we want to have the ball. We want to push it forward. But I mean, we have now I think 4 or 5 times played even 2-2, and every time we got in the bag with 0-1 or 0-2. So the system was already forced to react and not act, because you were in not in front, but the other team was in front. Do you know what I mean?
I do. Yeah, I'm just trying to formulate.
Like what I liked about those games, like even though we went, you know, 1.2-0 down, we did fight back, which I think under, you know, in previous years, we did not have that mental, or the team did not have that mental fortitude to come back from being so down. I think they would have given up a lot earlier in the match. So being able to come back is amazing. But if you can come back too, then you can still get one more. You can still go one beyond.
Yeah, and I think the only game we've seen kind of that mental fortitude kind of let us down is in the most recent game against Karlsruhe. I think every time they've taken to the pitch, they've fought to win the game, and have been trying to play really attractive football and positive football. We're not just dumping the ball forward, hoping to get a goal, and then pour everything into the defense to try and hold on. I mean, we could be playing very cynical football, but we're playing really, really positive and attractive football. And I think that's the biggest impact of Timo so far, especially when you compare to this time a year ago. The players seem to be in a much better place in terms of their morale, and I mean that alone is, I think, such a huge step forward for the first team.
Yeah, totally agree that, and we've been talking about Timo in side sentences several times. Samantha, what are your thoughts we already figured out that you weren't a big fan of Luukay. the football Sean just described with very defensive and the ball and pushed in front and let's hope for something good was Marcus Kroczynski's kind of football. What are your first impressions of Timo Schulz?
I think he is a bit of a fresh air when it comes to our most, like, particularly in contrast to Kroczynski and Luhuke. How he presents himself in the press conferences and the snippets that I get and understand, he just seems a lot more positive. I think he's got more positive relationships with the players. And I think that, to Sean's point, that's showing in the pitch where people are willing, the players are willing to go out and fight and they're listening to instructions. I like it when I hear that there was a plan and that we executed the plan, and we may have not have done it perfectly, but at least there was a plan. And there's just, you know, people building around Timo that I really like so far. I always get worried when it comes to November, December, because we sometimes we have a little bit of a down, and then maybe right before Winterpause we'll start picking steam back up again. So I'm a little bit worried that we're going to be stuck in the relegation area for a while. But I think if Timo continues to be positive and works on bringing out the best of his players, I think we'll be able to turn it around.
Yeah, there's still so much football left to be played.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, it's just 7 games already gone, and we have many, many opportunities to turn things around. And like all these years, the second division is so close. I think it's just 2 or 3 points to the first 5 or something. So nothing is lost. But I mean, you mentioned the Karlsruhe game, and when you get we call it Sonntagsschuss. So a shot that you just make out 1 out of 10 times by a KC player in the first 3 minutes, and then you get it and it's still in the goal and you are in the back after 4 minutes. I think this young team has not every time the morality to come back and fight back. So we will have games like this, but we will also have games like the Derby, where it's a fight from minute 1 to minute 90. Speaking for myself, I really like it more that way than I think the Hannover game last year, we get a 0-1 after some minutes, and after that there was nothing. So
yeah, it felt like, other than that Hanover match that we got to witness in person, other than, I feel like, Dali, there was not a single player on the pitch that was trying to make an effort. Like, they were just so defeated from the get-go, and it just showed. And it was disappointing to not see them even try, really. Like, they might as well just sat down on the pitch. So to have fast-forward a year and for... even though we ended with that Karlsruhe match not having the scoreline anywhere near I would have liked it to be, still seeing some good football, some good teamwork, and they're not acting like pylons on the pitch speaks volumes to me.
And this is the first time in, I think, a lot of years where we've had youth on our side, and the contracts, a raft of fresh contracts, where we're not up against the wall at the end of the season and trying to make really difficult choices. I think we've got a really good foundation that we can build off of. And now we might not experience immediate success, but I think all the ingredients are there to make a successful team. So it'll just be a matter of time, I think. We definitely have the potential to be a very, very good team with the players that we have right now.
Yeah. would take time, of course. One thesis or one thought that many people here have is that Timo Schulz, because he has this history with the club, will have much more credit in his work than the coaches before him. Would you agree or not?
Sorry, that he's got a lot more credit, like credibility?
Now, credit in meaning of that he will not be fired after three or four bad matches, like it's usual in football.
Yeah. Well, I like to think that our club is better than firing people after a couple of bad matches. And I agree with Sean that we do have the quality. I could see, though, about having a relationship with someone or a company or whatever, like when you have that relationship over a period of time, that I do think that you're probably given a lot more benefit of the doubt, particularly with Timo doing so well with the youth side. I think that gives him, you know, a lot of leeway. And to be honest, like I don't, the thought of anybody or of him being potentially let go after a few games didn't even register in my brain. And maybe that's because I feel like he's a better person than some of our other previous managers are that I would have been happy to see go in short order.
You could even make the argument that within the context of modern football, not necessarily club culture, but I think we held on to Luhuke way too long.
Totally.
I mean, he was given far too much leeway and really jeopardized our time in the Zweite Bundesliga. So, I mean, I think we have a much more steady hand in terms of not just pulling the trigger very quickly on a manager. And really, we have shown all the potential. We've had not a terrible run of form. We've had a lot of draws, and when you're pulling 1 point instead of three, that obviously is going to impact you heavily on the table. But I think because he comes from the club and has a history with the club, I think he's going to have a lot of time to develop his vision and his system. And all of the advantages will come along, but I think the club is very likely to give him all the time that he needs to reasonably bring all of these parts together. And I think one of the things that I've admired so much about him so far is that he has taken personal responsibility for the results.
Yes.
not going St. Pauli's way. He, in press conferences, he has said, you know what, that was on me. I made the decision to go with this substitution or this formation that wasn't successful. And that is such a breath of fresh air after last season. So I think he's going to be around for a while.
Yeah. It doesn't hurt that he's on the heels of Luhuke, who was, I think, a disaster. And I think did more damage than good. So I think on the heels of that, on top of having already a relationship with the club, being on the heels of Luhuke, I think, yeah, he will have a lot of time to be able to build what he needs to.
Yeah, let's hope for that. When we finished all of this up, the players we have expectations in, the players we left, the new coach, the new way of playing, what will all this mean at the end of the season? Where will FC St. Pauli finish up after 34 match days?
Well, Yannick, we're notoriously poor at predictions. I don't feel terribly comfortable giving a prediction. Although if you were to force me to, I think
Just listen to your heart.
The bottom of the top half of the table. I think we're going to be in like the second quarter of the table. We're not going to be...
Give me a position number. What does that even mean?
Like somewhere between...
6 and 10 or 6 and 9.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not even good at math. Come on. Yeah, somewhere in there, I think, is where we're going to end up eventually. No, I think much like the match against Karlsruhe, we are going to lose matches that we aren't going to feel good about. But you know what? I think the potential is there for us to build some really amazing memories this season. I think we're going to have success, but it's... I don't think we're going to rocket to the top of the table and end up in Bundesliga next year. But I don't think we're going to be in Dritte Liga either. I think we're far better than that. If everything plays out as it looks on paper today. Now, who knows? We also have a winter transfer window coming up. Who knows what resources there are within the club to buy players, or if we're going to... if we're going to pay for a player or look for those hidden gems, that'll remain to be seen, and that'll be an important part of the overall experience of the 2021 season. What about you, Smarty Pants?
Oh no! See, I was going to get Yannick to go first, and then I'll go last.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You're cheating.
I'm taking the child or the coward's way out, but okay. I'm curious how Yannick goes first. Yeah. Oh, shush.
That's totally fine. Actually, I quite agree with Sean that the team will take his time or need his time to or its time to evolve and find its way together, and that this will at the end, I think in my prediction in another talk was like 7 or 8, so I would stick with 7, I think, which is not the best position, but if you look at this huge changes in the summertime, it would be still be a good position, and going to the top level right now would even maybe crash the way we are just starting, because when you like finish third or fourth like Heidenheim or HSV, the good players will be going away again. When they made a good matches at your club, and the whole thing that just started, the whole new way we just started, will just be ending, as far as some players are concerned.
You're up.
I'm up. I say 5th or 6th. That's my prediction. I'm sticking to it. This is what I was thinking the entire time you two were going on. I say 5th or 6th. I think we will. I am confident that we are going to figure out our front two bit of formation and that partnership there's a reason he keeps putting Chide and Mahanok up there together. So I think that will start reaping rewards. So I'm confident 5th or 6th.
So no use for discussion here. We're quite the same opinion.
This is odd. I'm feeling very uncomfortable that we're all more or less agreeing with each other here.
As the person that's usually like the negative Nelly, I have the most optimistic outcome prediction. So there you go.
Yeah. 6th was also in Sean's prediction with the second quarter, so...
He doesn't believe 6. I can tell by looking at him. He doesn't believe 6. He's thinking like 10th.
No, I'm not.
You're not thinking 6th. There's no way you would think that we're going to get 6th.
I stand by what I said.
Okay. Cheating.
Yeah. Maybe it's my influence that you so much agree.
Yes. Actually, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So, Guido Bergstaller, the grand experiment, which so far has not has not gone terribly well. What are you hearing in terms of his injury situation, his potential return, and were we? What do you think of the experiment of signing him in the first place? Were we hoping against hope, or was this a heart decision or a brain decision?
Sorry, I didn't get the name.
Bergstaller.
Ah, okay. The Burgi.
Oh, that's a cute nickname, Burgi.
Yeah, I think it's a little when you buy a big name, you buy a lot of expectations. It was the same with Alex Meyer. When he came here, many expectations came with him. I don't know. I appreciate that he made the decision to come to us, but yeah, he will have to prove me wrong that he's just a big name that hasn't scored in many months and almost years, I think. So yeah, it's a black box.
And there hasn't been any rumor about when he's coming back yet? Because I know he was undergoing surgery, so it could be quite some time. But you haven't heard any rumors?
I haven't heard of anything so far, no.
Ooh, that doesn't... That's not good. That's not good.
Yeah. So every time
we'll see him in May. Maybe.
every time when Timo's talking about the staff, he's just... speaking of CIs and Avivor and those ones who are also a little elaborating on older injuries but just came back now and yeah, the name Burgstaller is not spoken by him in conferences, so I think already this year we won't see him on the pitch again. Okay, do you have anything that you want to add to the sportive perspective on the club? Or anything else that we missed on talking about?
I mean, we've talked about our expectations for the club that we love. Do you have any expectations for the club that we hate? Will we see the final or the eventual departure of the boys in the Rothosen from the Zweite Bundesliga this season? Are they on their way up finally?
The problem is, there are two sides of my heart. One is that I think we had that in. Before the record or off record, that we just want to not lose to derbies, which has succeeded in the first one already, and then they can get promoted and we will still be Derby-Sieger. The problem is that would be one good way to go at all. Of course, I would love to say goodbye to them with a derby Zeke when they play at the Millantor. But my problem is I don't see a club that can challenge them as far as the first seven games are concerned. Osnabrück is on second. That they won't make it through the whole season in this first. First quarter of first three or four or five. Paderborn, I thought they would go directly the way they always go when they get relegated down from first to second division. They go straightly to third division. That's the normal things. That's the normal way things go. I don't see names. Maybe Hanover when they get stabilized more. Holstein Kiel is always a club that you can that you have to deal with or have an eyes on. But I don't see three other clubs that would make it impossible for HSV to become first, second, or third. Do you see any?
I think they're a shoo-in to win the division. There's certainly some challengers in the mix, but I think right now with the mix that they have in playing and managing personnel, I think they're bound to go straight back up. Now that's kind of my nightmare scenario. I wanted them to go up and go away,
but only in second.
But I didn't want them to win the division, and I think that's going to be something that they're going to achieve. Now, like you, and I think anyone who loves the boys in brown would love to see us see them off as Derby Seeger. But that I think is the only situation that's going to be the most positive. I think they're going to go away. Hopefully we keep Hamburg Brown Weiss in the meantime.
And then we can watch them getting their ass kicked in first division again.
Right? Wouldn't that be amazing?
That would be the best.
And then they can become the Bundesliga punching bags, and that's always fun to watch.
Yeah, not a bad scenario we imagine right here. Okay, my topics are done so far. Samantha, do you have anything to add? So, but if not, we would come to the famous last words before we finish with about 90 minutes of playtime.
You know, we're good. We can just deal with the 90 minutes just like the boys in brown do. I don't have anything other than maybe famous last words. What about you, Sean?
I think that's everything I've got.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess in the meantime,
you know what to do.
Okay, last words from me. Thank you for your time, and I hope we have many listeners that took the time to hear all of this we discussed. Maybe I should say in the show notes that after all this politics stuff, there will be football.
We promise there will be football eventually.
Yeah, yeah. So that people stick with us through the whole match.
And thank you for having us on, Yannick. It was funny, I was thinking a few weeks ago that we haven't been on each other's podcasts in a while. So thank you for the invitation. Yeah. We'll have you on ours soon.
You're very welcome. I think the last time we spoke was the combined international version with the New York Sean, the female Sean, and Ernie, I think. But that also was already in January 2019. So,
It's been a while.
Yeah,
absolutely.
All right. Thank you again. And what's the time right now in Canada?
It is about 20 minutes to 4.
Yeah, it's close to midnight right here. So,
bedtime for Yannick.
It's a Saturday night, so. Okay.
That's the spirit.
All right. Thanks again, and take care.
Our pleasure. Thank you. Thanks, too. Yannick.